This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial, Tax and Accounting Services, and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. And your number is 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. Robin Dow is producing, and we start our show with Hudson Curley Holman, LSU football coach, 1991 to 1994. A remarkable life in football for Hudson Curley Holman, who turned 75 years old the other day, and we'll talk about his life and times and the relevance to today. But happy birthday, Coach.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Really, turned 76. I'm not going to feel.
Really? Yeah. You're listed as 1947. You were born in 40. Right. You were born in 46 then. Okay.
Yeah, but somewhere along the lines is a misprint.
Well, most people would take that year, but Hudson Curley Holman has never been a guy to shy away from the truth. And I think after all these years, you got a bum rap because you're a good coach. You were a great coach coming to LSU. As I stated in the open, you were on two national championship teams as an assistant coach, including the defensive coordinator at Clemson in 1981 when you were 33. And that was when Clemson wasn't winning national championships. Danny Ford and Hudson Curley Holman and Nelson Stokley beat Nebraska in the Orange Bowl 22-15. That Nebraska team had Roger Craig and Mike Rozier in the backfield. So somebody was calling pretty good defensive plays for Clemson, and the guy who was doing it is our guest today. And then at Southern Miss, you had three good seasons. You had a great quarterback in Brett Favre, but I believe in those 3 years you beat Mississippi State, Florida State, Alabama, and Auburn. So you came here, and I remember Joe Dean saying that, the athletic director, saying that Gil Brandt, the fabled scout of the Cowboys, said to him, hire Curley Holman and never look back. But as you know, there's that fine line between a program taking off and not taking off. And somewhere along the way, in your fourth season, when you were fighting for your job, you lost games by 1 point, 2 points, 4 points, and 5 points. So you were a few points away from being 8-3 rather than 4-7. But as you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So, Hudson Curley Holman, what is your reflection about your 4 years at LSU?
Well, to go back, you know, the bottom line, especially at a place like LSU, and I'll say this, if it's not the greatest atmosphere in the country, it's in the top three on a Saturday night or a Saturday ball game. It's very special. LSU was a place where I grew up. And, you know, living as a crow flies two miles across the river from Tuscaloosa, the University of Alabama, place where you get in to sell nuts, popcorn, programs, whatever. And but I started off at an early age listening to WWL and LSU. My brother Moody and my sister Mildred, they took a liking to LSU a long time ago. I can hear Moody, and they're all gone. I'm the last of eight, and all my brothers and sisters are gone. But they kind of guided me a little bit to listen to LSU every Saturday night. And so listening to Billy Cannon, the GOAT team, the white team, and the Chinese Bandits. So I grew up with a liking for LSU, and fortunate enough, when I went to Texas A&M, back then, we didn't have a home at home. 3 years that I started at A&M, we always played in Tiger Stadium. And I look forward to it now because of that following Billy Cannon. And of course, at A&M, I got to coach Billy Jr. And so it was a school. I knew at an early age, naturally, I wanted to be an athlete. You know, I played football, basketball, baseball, and did a lot of boxing as a youngster, and even some when I was in college. But in the sixth grade, I knew I wanted to be a football coach. I was football manager for Hootie Ingram, athletic director at Florida State, but that kind of started the avenue that I wanted to be a coach. Mm-hmm. And naturally, you want to be a thing big, but LSU was one of the places that I always wanted to coach.
And you got the job coached in 1990, end of 90. So even with the revised birthday, you were 43 years old, and it looked like you might be here for a long time. I know Joe Dean thought he had the guy who would lead the program for a generation. And a listener notes that you didn't leave the cupboard bare, that Jerry DiNardo won with the talent that you had assembled for 3 years, and then he had two losing seasons and was out. But I'm just looking. I just wrote down as you were talking some of the players that I remember who played for you, and I'm sure I'm missing a few, so please forgive me if I miss a prominent name. But I know two Pro Football Hall of Famers, Alan Faneca and Kevin Mawai, played for Curly Holman, as did Todd Kinchin, Odell Beckham Sr., Anthony Marshall, Marcus Price, Gabe Northern, Eddie Kinnison, Jamie Howard, David LaFleur, Torrey James. That's an amazing collection of talent. So why didn't you win more?
I really think that to win and win the way you want to and reach the goals that you've got for the players, there is a natural football chemistry, and I wouldn't sit here and talk about that all day long. But we never could quite get that chemistry that we developed at Southern Miss quickly. And one thing I told people that several times over the years, that certain things you're proud of. I'm super proud of the way we recruited, and we closed it took us a while, but we closed the borders of the state a little bit, and some of those players are leaving. We're super proud of the recruiting. No, we didn't win enough games. That's the bottom line. And earlier you said, the bottom line is winning. And we didn't accomplish that. I truly believe if we'd have got the fifth year, that I was going to make a lot of little changes. I won't go into those, but I really think we had proved well enough, and that we could have pulled it off. But that's part of the job, and certain things, like I said, you're proud of the great recruiting, and proud of that we did something that there was no other university. Before me, before us, during the time there or afterwards, we created the Charlie McClendon Coach Mack Scholarship Fund. It was a better scholarship fund for former players than the one that Coach Bryant created at Alabama. His was just for his former players. The one I created at LSU was for any former football player. And I don't know where that is now. Like the NCAA, and who knows what they did, and they thought it might be a recruiting advantage. But any youngster that finished their eligibility and they met the entrance requirements to go to LSU, and those former players, their children, mm-hmm. would get financial aid.
All right.
I'm proud of that.
You did some things beyond the field of play. And Curly Holm is a stand-up guy. One of the things I admired about him is that he was fired with two games to go, and he didn't tuck tail and run and take the contract and say, I'm out of here. You coached those last two games, and you won them, and you left a winner, and I believe you are a winner. It just didn't come together at Louisiana State University. But listener makes a good point. First question, this is from Hal in Monroe, about you went to A&M. In fact, that was Gene Stallings as a young man beating Bear Bryant in the Cotton Bowl. I think you intercepted Kenny Stabler twice in that game. But you went to A&M and you coached at Alabama under Bear Bryant. LSU today has some issues with the new environment, NIL and such, competing with A&M and Alabama in their same division. Your thoughts about how that's going to work out moving forward for LSU going against the big boys?
I think that LSU will be fine, and with this, I still don't totally agree with it or grasp what the NIL really represents. I actually told somebody kind of humorously, I said, NIL, it stands for Need Intelligent Leadership this day and age, but I don't know where all that is going. Things are being done now.
All right, you're fading on us a bit. We may have to call him back, Robin. All right. There we go. Got him back now. Let's see if we can make it happen. Curly, you were saying about NIL when we lost you.
I think that's probably what it needs is what it's needing.
Let's try calling him back. He's starting to weave in and out, and obviously in this day and age, most people rely on their cell phones, myself included, and Curly Holman is no exception. We got another segment, but Hudson Curly Holman, 4 years at LSU. He left here, and he coached in other places, but now lives back in his home state of Alabama. His wife is former state senator Tammy Irons, a Democrat in Alabama, who many were touting to run for governor. She opted not to, but a lady of exceptional quality, and Curly Holman had two daughters when he arrived here, and they are now unbelievably 46 and 42 years old. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with former LSU coach Curly Holman. He left Tiger Town, it's difficult to believe, 28 years ago, but he did with his head held high, and after he was dismissed, he opted to coach against Tulane in Arkansas, and he won his last two games. And by virtue of doing that, that brought his overall record to 39-39 in 7 years, three at Southern Miss, four at LSU, and he had been a national champion twice as an assistant, once as defensive coordinator at Clemson under Danny Ford, and once in his early tenure at Alabama under the legendary Bear Bryant. So he had a great career that was interrupted by a not-so-good finish at LSU. But I think over time, people know that he gave it his best. It just didn't work out, and as mentioned by Hal and Monroe, Curly Holman, when he left here, he left enough talent that Jerry DiNardo immediately had three exceptionally good seasons with Curly's talent. And so I think he's been maligned, and perhaps unfairly. Another listener, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, says that in your 4 years, you didn't have any mismatched opponents. Even the non-conference people were pretty tough. You played tough schedules, didn't you?
Well, Jim, going back, there was a guy, and I didn't ask for it, an NCAA guy that deals with this kind of stuff, talking about our schedule. And we were someplace, and he said, I researched this, and he said, "Dear, Coach, you probably don't realize it, but I knew we played a tough schedule. I knew that. I'd been around football long enough that I knew something about the opponents we were playing." He said, "Dear, in your four-year time at LSU, you played the toughest schedule in college football during those 4 years. But at the same time, that's part of it." And I know Jerry DiNardo, and he got the job, and he said, "Curly, tell me what I need to know." I said, "You better get schedule changed to a certain extent, especially early in the year, and where you can help plan a lot of those young kids and developing their confidence and developing that team chemistry. But that's here and there. That's all way down the road. But we played some tough people, and we had a bunch of young, good players."
You were playing A&M in those years, it was a tough schedule. And we LSU, by the way, is playing Southern this Saturday. It's going to be a great spectacle, long overdue, and it's going to be a great thing for our community. But on the field in Las Vegas, LSU has a 98.7% chance of winning, and Southern a 1.3% chance. When you were facing the likes of A&M, it was much, much different, as we know. But did you ever go to Joe Dean and say, "Joe, I need some relief here"?
Yep. We talked about it in one of our meetings, and I just told him, I said, "Just look around. You look at the other schools in the country. Every now and then there is one of those top games there. You know, we also play Florida State." But I just said, "Joe, we got to change the schedule a little bit and all that." And Joe with the silver tongue there, he said, "Oh, Curly, we can't. The fans won't come." I'm going to tell you what, the fans at LSU are at the equal, if not better, supporters on game day than any place I have ever been. They'll show up if you're playing the Sisters of the Poor, because they love their football. They've always loved their football, and they always will. Like I said, it's one of the great athletes.
All right, fading a little bit again. But Curly Hallman, that's okay. Not your fault. But you've had a life independent of LSU now for 28 years, and you did marry a lady who is a person of consequence. I mentioned when we lost you a moment ago that Tammy Irons was courted by many in Alabama to run for governor.
Yep, she was in politics. She's a lawyer here in the Shoals area in Florence, Alabama. We're about Tennessee.
All right, starting to lose you a little bit again, but
hello.
Yeah, you're still there. Hello? You're still there. You're okay. Moving in and out, Curly. But Tammy is quite a lady, and I mentioned your daughters who were young when you arrived. That was
Hello?
In 1990. That would have been 32 years ago. They were 10 and 14, 16. No, actually, I guess, man, geez, they were 10 and 16, and now they're 46 and 42. Actually, I got my math wrong there. They were 14 and 10, so they're 46 and 42 now, so... Time goes by, as we know, and Curly had two Pro Football Hall of Famers play for him at LSU, and Kevin Mawai and Alan Faneca. So he did not leave the cupboard bare. He recruited well, and he played a tough schedule, and LSU lost a lot of close games, and that's the nature of the beast. I've mentioned that Nick Saban, in his third year at Michigan State, he almost got fired. The year before, he went 9-2 and then came to LSU. In his third year at Michigan State, Nick Saban lost his opener at East Lansing to Colorado State, then went to Oregon and lost 48-7, or some score. It was a lopsided margin, huge lopsided margin. He was on the brink of getting canned, but he eked out a 6-6 season, and he upset Notre Dame and Ohio State, and that enabled Nick Saban to keep his job, have a great year, come to LSU, and as we know, the rest is history. Seven national
Hello?
Championships. Yes, Curly, can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So you sound strong now. So I mentioned Mawai and Faneca, two Hall of Famers. Did you know they were that good when you had them?
Well, I knew Kevin was already there, and I knew he was a special player quickly. And great player for us, great player in the pros, and, of course, evaluate Alan. I think he's from the Houston area, but just recently inducted. I knew he was going to be a special player, and I've been criticized a little bit because we redshirted him. As a true freshman, well, sometimes that's the best thing that can happen to a college football player or an athlete, to redshirt long ways from home. But it worked out great, and I talked to Alan, and fortunate enough, of course, Brett's in the Hall of Fame. You can coach for 100 years and may never have a player that's in the NFL Football Hall of Fame. But Kevin and Adam, two great players and two great human beings.
Well, I mentioned that you were hired in 1990, left in 94. I think your highest pay, I think, was $235,000. Today, Brian Kelly, the coach at LSU, makes that in about a week, 1 week. And he lost to Florida State 24-23. I suspect you were watching, and I bet you were thinking, oh, my goodness, this guy is going to get some grief. What do you think about the loss to Florida State University? 24-23, blocked extra point. Let's see if we can get him back on, and I apologize to our listeners for the phone issues, but sometimes these things happen, and Curly Hallman knows the pressure cooker. But how can there be pressure for a coach like Kelly, who has a 10-year contract, and if he's fired tomorrow, he gets 90% of the remaining amount to go? Coach Orgeron was in Little Rock yesterday at their touchdown club, and he has asked about leaving LSU, and he said when they told him they were going to give him $17 million, he says, which door do I go through? I'll take it. I'm out of here. See ya. Good night. But in Curly Hallman's day, he was making $235,000. Today, the coach is making around $10 million a season. Coach, the times have changed a lot. I don't think there's a lot of pressure when you're going to get multi-million dollars, $50, $60 million to walk away if you're fired. But nonetheless, these guys are professionals. They're dedicated to their craft. And I'm sure Coach Kelly was not happy about the outcomes Sunday night.
No, the salaries are amazing right now. And this is something a lot of people don't know. I like telling the story. It goes back to how much I love coaching, and you always wanted to be a coach. I hitchhiked to my first full-time coaching job. Joe Stallings wasn't going to hire me as a young coach at Texas A&M, and I was going to hitchhike to Tuscaloosa, which I did. And finally, a guy in Orange, Texas, I wanted to work for, Neil Morgan, he called and offered me a job. Shipped that Foot Locker on to Orange, hitchhiked all night, and walked in that parking lot at 7:30 the next morning. So I hitchhiked almost 18 hours. So I wanted to coach, and I think my first job was $7,700 to 76. But I love coaching. I knew at an early age that's what I wanted to do. And these guys nowadays, it's amazing.
Well, Coach Hallman, great to talk with you. Glad you're doing well, and we'll hopefully talk with you again soon. But thanks for your contribution to Louisiana and LSU. We're back with more after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're in for a special treat. Haley Arsenault is with us. She's a St. Jude Children's Research Hospital physician assistant, commercial astronaut. Joined billionaire Jared Isaacman on SpaceX's first private spaceflight, Inspiration 4, which launched on September 16th of last year. We're coming up on 1 year. It successfully water-landed on Saturday, September 18th. And Haley is 30 years old, but has had a full life. She's written a book about her life called Wild Ride. The subtitle, A Memoir of IV Drips and Rocket Ships. In addition to everything else, she is a cancer survivor and heroically went into space despite being the first astronaut with prosthetic limbs to do so. And good morning, Haley.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And it's great to hear your voice. And it's great to have a great phone line, too. But I knew your dad well. We went to college together, Howard. Who was a fabulous journalist in his own right. I miss him and think of him a lot, and I'm sorry he's gone at a much too young age, but I'm sure he and your mother, Colleen, had a great impact on your life, Haley.
They absolutely did, and thank you for sharing that. That makes me so happy knowing that you knew my dad.
He was a journalist, and I'm sure he probably talked with you a time or two about your intent. You wanted to do this for a long time, didn't you?
Writing the book? I never really saw that happening. And then, you know, like I get my dream job at St. Jude, and then I'm invited to go to space. I'm training for space. And I was inspired by other people to write it because a lot of people reached out to me, and then they told me that my story inspired them, either with overcoming something difficult like illness or to try something new and daring like going to space. And so just by being so touched by them, I wanted to share my story to a wider audience and then more permanently. And then that's when I decided to write Wild Ride.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got selected to this trip. Many, of course, wanted to. Now, this isn't for everybody, but you did it. And you survived it, did it well, and I'm sure that if for those who've seen Haley, she has a incredible smile. I'm sure you were smiling when you landed, but what was the process as far as getting this guy, Isaacman, to select you? What happened?
I am pretty sure I'm the only person ever to just get a phone call out of the blue saying, do you want to go to space? Like, I did not know there was a space mission. I did not apply for anything. I get an email from St. Jude one day, and they said they wanted to talk to me about a unique opportunity. And so I join a call with them, and they start telling me about Jared and the mission, which was called Inspiration 4. And it was the first all-civilian mission to space, and it was going to be used as a fundraiser for St. Jude. And I'm listening to the call thinking, okay, what do I have to do with this? And then they asked if I wanted to go to space. and it was just such a shocking moment. I actually laughed and I said, are you serious? and I followed that with yes. And then I said, okay, let me check with my mom. But my answer is yes. And so I called my mom and I said, you are not going to believe this, but it's true. I just got asked to go to space. And she was obviously shocked. I was still in shock, but I said, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And she was like, yes, you have to go. And actually, my brother and my sister-in-law are both aerospace engineers. And so they were my next call, and I asked them if they thought it was safe, and they said yes. Well, my sister-in-law first said, when I asked her if she would go, she said, I would never go. You're basically on top of a bomb. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go. And she said, and then she made sure that I knew that she fully supported it. But I was able to give St. Jude that big yes. And then what followed were about 6 to 8 months of pretty intense training to go to space. And then we launched in September, and our mission ultimately raised $250 million for St. Jude and for cancer research, which was just incredible.
$250 million. That's a quarter of $1 billion. So Haley did well. And this issue with cancer, I mentioned your dad, but it's near and dear to you. You've had your battles too.
Absolutely. I was diagnosed with bone cancer at age 10. And, you know, getting that cancer diagnosis at such a young age was terrifying. And at age 10, everyone I had known with cancer had died. And so I thought it was a death sentence. But it was my dad found St. Jude, and he called them. He asked if they would take me. And a couple days later, I was on my way to Memphis. And as soon as we walked in the doors of St. Jude, I started feeling hope and that I was going to be okay. And I spent a year at St. Jude. I underwent some pretty intense chemo. And then I also had surgery to save my leg, where they removed the part of my bone that was affected by the tumor and replaced it with an internal prosthesis. But that year that I spent at St. Jude was the most important year of my life. And I really believe it made me who I am. And I just fell in love with the place. I fell in love with the staff. And I knew since I was 10 that I wanted to grow up and return to work at St. Jude one day.
And that you have done. It seems like everything you set your mind to do, you do it.
Yes, I got my dream job 2.5 years ago, but I will tell you, it wasn't an easy road. And I kind of talk in the book about it. And I think maybe other people have had similar experiences, just having to try again. I actually applied to St. Jude a couple times before I ultimately got my dream job. But in the meantime, I had to gain experience. And then it made it so much sweeter whenever I did get my dream job. And now I work as a PA at St. Jude on the inpatient side of things. And I just have the greatest job in the world. I get to work with the coolest kids, the bravest little kiddos and their families. And it's just the greatest honor of my life.
877-217-5757 for astronaut Haley Arsenault. She's 30 years old, so I'm sure if she wants to, there's time to go back into space. You want to do it again?
On one hand, absolutely. Going to space is incredible. But on the other hand, I really want other people to go, especially when I went to space, about 500-something people had ever gone, and it was less than 70 women had ever gone to space. And those numbers are so small, so I really want other people to go.
Well, what was the journey like? Was it anything that scared the bejesus out of you, or were you okay?
Well, to be honest, there were some parts of training that was more nerve-wracking. We had to climb a mountain. We climbed Mount Rainier in Washington, and I was pretty scared for that. Especially with the prosthesis I have in my leg, and my prosthesis has broken twice over the years. And I was worried during training that something would happen to my leg and I wouldn't be able to go to space. But when launch day came, I was not nervous. I was just so ready. And I remember they're counting down from 10, and I just say, let's do this. Because I knew in 9 minutes I was going to be in space, and I was just so excited, so ready to be there. But to be honest, I was a little nervous coming back to Earth, this reentry process. It's more intimidating than launch.
What was it like when you went up and away and you realize this isn't like flying from Baton Rouge to Mobile? It's a big adventure. What was the feeling like, and what was the experience like?
I loved launching. It was so fun. And I'm a girl who loves roller coasters, and I love high G-forces. We learned that in training. After our first training exercise was the centrifuge, and that's when I got my nickname, the G-Monster. But we, so, you know, the countdown from 10, we feel this big jolt, and then we, the G-forces come on pretty quickly. And we ended up hitting 4.5 G's during launch and reentry. And we, outside of our capsule, I could hear this fastest whooshing sound I'd ever heard. And then there's different kind of phases of launch. But whenever we hit space, it was incredible because launch itself was, it was loud, it was intense. And then we get to space and all of a sudden there's just utter stillness and silence. And then my strap started floating and knew we were in space. And it was just very surreal realizing that we were in space and then getting to unbuckle and start floating was so fun. I absolutely loved floating.
And then when you came down and you knew you were going to make it, I'm sure that was quite a fantastic voyage as well. Quite an odyssey. How was it like, knowing you were going to make it and, coming down? Was it as exhilarating as it was going up, up and away?
You know, it was just more nerve-wracking for me. And it was also, it felt more intense physically because having those 3 days of no gravity, when we started feeling just a smidge of gravity again, it was ridiculously heavy. And so the G-forces felt much, much more intense on, upon reentry. But just, you know, even though it feels like you can't breathe, you just have to tell yourself, like, I'm still breathing. I'm going to get through this in a few minutes. And then the parachutes deploy. And, cause we had a water landing, the parachutes deploy and it's very, kind of a big jolt upwards, and there's two sets of parachutes, and then it kind of rocks the spacecraft back and forth, and then the second set comes out. And after the second set came out, I literally screamed, "Thank God!" because I knew that we were going to be okay. And then we splashed down in the water, which was we definitely felt the splashdown, and we were just we were so happy that our mission had gone well. And Jared called, who was our commander. He called Mission Control, and he said, "Inspiration for mission complete." And then it was that evening that we found out we had surpassed our $200 million fundraising goal for St. Jude. And then we said, it's not only mission complete, but mission accomplished.
Well, Haley Arsenault is with us for a bit longer. Her book is Wild Ride. We'll take a call or two if you'd like to get in. The number's 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Baton Rouge treasure. She is a hero, and she has a story to tell, a cancer survivor and an astronaut who's been to space and back. We'll return after this with Haley Arsenault. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Haley Arsenault is with us, 30 years old. Her book is Wild Ride. It's about her conquering cancer and also making it to outer space and back. She's had quite a 3 decades of life, and as I mentioned, I knew her dad really well, Howard Arsenault, fine gentleman, exceptional guy, and quite a reporter, and I'm sure he would be beaming on the earth and is beaming in another realm over the successes of his daughter, who carries his buoyant spirit, and what a smile Haley Arsenault has, and she has a story to tell if you'd like to. Get in our remaining time, 877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines in just a moment, but the cancer diagnosis, I'm sure that's sobering for anybody, but how did that happen, Haley?
I was a very active 10-year-old, and one of the activities I was most involved in was taekwondo. And actually, I took that with my dad. We earned our black belts together. But I started, as I was working my way towards my black belt, I started having pain in my knee. And so we went to see a doctor who felt it was overuse from the taekwondo, but the pain started getting worse. And then I started limping. And it was at that point that my mom took another good look at my knee. And there was this egg-sized lump that had grown above my knee. And so the next day we went to see my pediatrician in St. Francisville, and mom and dad were with me. I had an x-ray done, and back in the day, this was 2002, they used to ship the x-ray films on a ferry boat to New Roads to be read by a radiologist there. but my pediatrician requested that we bring her the films first. And so she reviewed the films. She walked in the exam room and just told us straight up, this is bone cancer. And that's, we just all started crying. And I kept saying, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And there was that afternoon that Dad found the website for St. Jude, and he called them. He asked if they would take me. And a few days later, I was walking in the doors of the hospital for the first time.
And look at you 20 years later.
Absolutely. And it's just it's such an honor for me to get to be with these families. And I work with them on the inpatient setting. So a lot of kids who have just been diagnosed with leukemia, lymphoma, and you know, now I get to walk the families through that process from the other side. And I got to tell you, it's just such an honor to be able to serve these families in this way and be there for them.
And your dad put up a heroic fight too. And of course, when you were diagnosed, I don't think he knew he had the issues that were going to envelop his life.
Yeah, we could not have seen that. And so he was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And at this point, I'm a PA. I'm working in the ER at Our Lady of the Lake in Baton Rouge. And he was actually diagnosed with cancer in my ER by my coworkers. And then he fought for 7 months, and then he passed away a couple of years ago. But I just, you know, I definitely try to live out his legacy every day. He's his presence, his memory stays with me in such a real way. And I had the greatest dad. And I talk a lot about him in my memoir too. And I think that is something that a lot of people will relate to, because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people have lost their parents, and even though it was just utterly heartbreaking, I think it also just fueled my desire to do what I can to help cure cancer. And so now that's working at St. Jude. And when that opportunity to go to space came my way, it was saying yes, knowing that we're going to raise a boatload of money for cancer research.
And your dad was only 60 when he died. I'm told he went to the finish line like a champ. He was a brave soldier.
Yeah. Brave soldier. And yes, I really wish I could have shared this space journey with him. And of course I would have wanted his opinion on my book, but you know, the lessons that he instilled in me, like, that is something that I just try to carry out every day and keep his legacy alive.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to get in under the wire with this remarkable lady, a person who's done Louisiana proud, Haley Arsenault. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim, and congratulations, and good for you. Good on you. You're a heroine. I have a question. Just how thick is our breathable atmosphere? I understand that it's a really fragile thing to our Earth and our atmosphere, and it's really something we have to take care of. Thank you.
What do you think?
Absolutely. So I don't know the numbers offhand, but I was able to see the atmosphere from orbit, and it was just incredible to see, because during the day passes, while we were over daytime on Earth, and it was lit up brightly, the atmosphere was just this this almost neon bright blue line. And at night, when we were over night passes, the atmosphere was almost kind of an orangey brown. But from the two perspectives, we could kind of see the thickness. And I think it kind of struck all of us how thin it is. And that is what is protecting us, protecting our home planet where we all live. And so being in space and seeing that from that perspective, I was filled with this whole new sense of, we need to do everything we can to protect our beautiful, beautiful planet, our home. It's, you know, it's fragile.
Alexa's asked about the commercial aspect of this. This wasn't a NASA-type space flight. It was done in a different way. It was successful, but you were breaking boundaries in that realm, too. What were your thoughts about going to space on an endeavor financed by a billionaire rather than one run by the U.S. government?
Well, the beauty of commercial space travel is I would not have ever been able to be a NASA astronaut because of the prosthesis in my leg. So the beauty of commercial is that I was able to train and become an astronaut, but through this other way that is opening up space travel to more and more people. Because traditionally, NASA astronauts have had to be physically perfect. I don't fall into that category. And so that's one reason about commercial travel that I'm getting really excited for is that people who aren't physically perfect can now go to space. And I'm excited because this is going to open up space travel to more and more people. And, you know, it really, it is not a joyride. It is, or at least the mission that we went on, this orbital space mission, it is hard work and training and learning. And it is risky, but there's just so much purpose behind it. And for us, you know, we raised so much money for cancer research, but also while we were in orbit, we participated in several different research endeavors. And so we really felt that we were also fortunate to be able to go to space, but we needed to contribute to science and, and make a difference. And so that's what we did.
I remember, on this show, several years ago, we had Marlo Thomas, the daughter of Danny Thomas.
Oh.
Yeah.
Love Marlo.
I remember her and that girl, but
that's a great show.
It was. You can't be old enough to remember that girl, but there are reruns. But Marlo carries the flame well for her dad, who started this in 1962, so 60 years. And today, I'm sure Danny Thomas would be proud of the legacy of St. Jude Children's Hospital. That is one of the beautiful entities in our country, and he did that on a leap of faith, and you're there every day. What is it like there?
It is such a hopeful place, and I've known St. Jude for 20 years from the patient, now the employee perspective, and it's such a place full of hope, and there are hard days. Childhood cancer is not cured. The reality is in the U.S., 1 in 5 children still do not survive their cancer. And so there are hard days. But there's just so much progress and new horizons. And that's very exciting to be part of and to witness. And the staff just, cares so much. And there's just so much passion that we all feel, to be able to work with these families and just so grateful to have the opportunity to do so.
Haley's a role model for all of us. Her story is in Wild Ride, but I mentioned your dad, who passed away 4 years ago, more than a few times, but I mentioned your mother once. She's an amazing person as well, isn't she?
Oh, she is incredible. She's the strongest person I know. I don't know how she does it. She has had to go through her child going through cancer treatment. She was just such a rock. Then losing her husband, my dad, and then she completely supported me through going to space when, you know, I think at times, you know, it was hard. I imagine it was, but she just always was so strong and just so proud. And so it was just a beautiful thing to share with her.
What's the next step? What would you like to do next, Haley?
You know, I want to keep exploring our planet. I have always loved, international travel, because I love seeing different parts of the world and meeting different cultures, but getting the perspective of our planet from space, it made me want to get back down to Earth and just continue exploring. We live on a beautiful planet. There's so much to see and so much to do. And so that's what I want to continue doing. And I will always work at St. Jude. I have my dream job and I love my job. And, you know, this is, as far as the books go, this is my memoir for adults, but next year I'm going to be coming out with the same version of this book, but for elementary school aged kids.
Well, thank you, Haley Arsenault. Thanks for inspiring us like few others. The book is Wild Ride. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Stay safe and stay tuned.